You ever wonder just how many creatures there are in the Americas? Well, Jason Offutt has. He's cataloged them. Over 250 creatures of cryptids and hairy beasts. His work is called Chasing American Monsters, and he's next with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Let me tell you a little bit about Jason Offutt. Jason has been a journalist since 1987, teaches journalism at the Northwest Missouri State University. Prior to that, he was the managing editor for the Kansas City entertainment magazine called The X and a humor columnist for the Examiner newspapers in Jackson County, Missouri. He has a Master of Arts degree in communication from Central Missouri State University. He's been published in Missouri Life magazine, Night Terrors magazine, Kansas City Family magazine, and many others. And his latest book is called Chasing American Monsters. He was on with Ian about 5 years ago, actually longer, 9 years ago, with What Lurks Beyond the Paranormal in Your Backyard. But Jason, welcome. Looking forward to this.
Hey, George. Yeah, so am I. I love talking about monsters. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
A fellow Missourian, by the way, huh?
Right. I'm on the opposite side of the state, but yes, fellow Missourian.
Has spring sprung out there yet?
Finally. Finally, we still have enormous piles of snow on campus, but they're melting off.
That's great. What do the students say about you? With you teach journalism, but here you are writing some of these strange cryptid monster books. What do they think?
Well, they're quite intrigued about it. I get people just coming into my office. I don't know. To talk to me about ghosts and, and monsters. I've even taught a couple of different classes, not every semester, but every few years I'll teach a class called Paranormal Journalism, and it fills up in a heartbeat.
You've been on shows with some of our dear friends, Whitley Strieber, Dave Schrader, good people. Good people indeed. I bet they think the world of your work, too.
Well, I hope so. I had the pleasure of meeting Dave a couple of years ago. I spoke at one of his events, and he's just a gracious. He was a gracious host, and he's just a great guy.
Yeah, he sure is. And then Whitley, boy, he knows his stuff, doesn't he?
Oh yeah, he sure does. I'm little intimidated by Whitley. As I told him the last time I talked with him, I'd been a fan of his writing since I was in high school and picked up one of his books at a used bookstore and was absolutely fascinated by everything he wrote.
I remember the first time I interviewed him, Jason. I was talking about his book Communion, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm talking to Whitley Strieber, but you got to keep that cool, you know that.
And, right.
So how did you get into the paranormal end of this?
Well, it happened at my interest as a kid. I, instead of watching Mr. Rogers, they had Lost in Space reruns at the same time. So that's what I watched. I was really into science fiction, loved monster movies. On the monster end, when I was a kid, I remember reading in the local newspaper, the Kansas City Star, about a Bigfoot encounter in Louisiana, Missouri. And that really, really made an impact on me because it was Bigfoot, it was in my state, and it was in the newspaper. And I followed the story for a few weeks until it eventually disappeared. But, I'd go out in the cornfields and with a bag with sandwiches, a notebook, and just I was looking for Bigfoot.
I got captured when I stumbled across the abominable snowman stories from the Himalayas. And, it was a white-looking furry creature. And then I saw the dark-haired Bigfoot years later, and I said, my gosh, that's the same-looking creature, except, the hair color's different. But I was hooked on all these things. And how did you go about researching Chasing American Monsters, which, by the way, is a very complete book? You did a great job with this.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that, George. A number of these just research. I wanted the stories to either have been cataloged in historic books in newspapers or other media outlets, or I interviewed people who encountered things. So that's where the research was. I wanted because there are a lot of books, and I've written a couple of them that are regional, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wrote Haunted Missouri was my first book, and those are great. But I wanted something that everybody could pick up and say, "Hey, wait a second, this is in my place. This is in my home state."
Absolutely, because your chapters are every state, various states, dealing with creatures in every state.
Yeah, right. And I've heard from a number of people, and I really appreciate it when I've heard them. They're like, you know, I grew up in Indiana, and I hadn't heard of this one. Thank you for putting that in the book. That was fascinating, because I'm going to do research on it now.
What do you find that the most prevalent creature is around the Americas? Is it Bigfoot?
Hands down, Bigfoot. Bigfoot has been seen in 49 out of the 50 states. Hawaii is the only one it hasn't been. There hasn't been a Bigfoot encounter. And Bigfoot is a big one for me, because it's not just been seen in all across North America. It's been seen in on every continent. Even Australia, for Christ's sakes, with the Yowie. So if any of these monsters in the book are real, I think that one is a big candidate for being real.
I think we can definitely conclude that people are seeing some kind of creature. There's no question in my mind. I mean, I'm sure we get a couple little hucksters that will create something or something like that. But by and large, you've got a lot of well-intentioned people seeing this creature. It's something. Whatever it may be, it's something, isn't it?
Right. And the passion behind the people who've encountered it when I've talked to them, they're reliving something as they're telling me the story. And they saw something. I'm absolutely convinced, like I said, that a lot of people have actually seen something real.
They get pretty emotional with some of these stories, too, don't they, Jason?
Well, I think I would, too.
Yeah.
This is one of the things that I've said for years when people talk to me about anything to do with the paranormal. It's great. I love the paranormal as long as it happens to somebody else.
We're going to go through a number of these creatures and monsters, and you can explain to us what they are and what some of the cases are from people. Next hour, Jason will take phone calls, and folks can either ask you a question or share a story with us, too, if they've come across a creature or two. You know what's interesting, too, Jason? The last couple of weeks, some of the weirdest fish and things have been showing up on shorelines. Just yesterday, we had a picture on the coasttocoastam.com website of this fish that looked like a huge rock or log from a tree. I mean, this thing was massive. It looked like it was like 6 feet long. It was huge. Its eyeball was as big as somebody's closed fist.
Right. I saw that picture, and if I were walking along the beach, I would not have thought that was a fish until I got right up on it.
And it would be freaky to see it as a fish, wouldn't it?
Right. Yeah, it would. And there have been a lot of these issues, not just washing up on the beach, but people, you know, catching fish or catching a glimpse of certain marine life places they're not usually. And it's just, the planet's warming up and things are going places they didn't normally used to be.
Did anybody ever report to you or anybody Bigfoot attacking and hurting somebody?
I've not personally talked with anybody who's been attacked by a Bigfoot. It seems like they will try to scare people away, like out of their territory, just run away. I've heard some accounts on programs of Bigfoot attacking people, but personally, I have not.
Great illustrations on the cover of the book, Chasing American Monsters. I would not want to come face to face with the Maine goat man or the Ozark howler.
Right. I know that, you know, I'd be more at peace with the howler because it's bipedal beasts that have some humanity in them. That those kind of freak me out.
The Bigfoot, Washington Bigfoot, you've got looks a little docile, even though he looks lumbering and huge, but he doesn't look as mean as the other one. The Maine goat man looks more like the devil, doesn't he?
Yeah. He sure does. And, yeah, the Bigfoot on the cover of the book, I'd go fishing with him. He looks like a nice guy.
Speaking of that, I did get a call during open lines a couple years ago from a guy who said he was fishing on the side of a bank, and he caught two trout. And he's holding them up, and as he does, he spots a Bigfoot that's right behind him looking at the two fish. the guy panics and hands the Bigfoot both fish, and Bigfoot takes them. He then looks at the guy and gives him one back.
Well, that's a great story.
It is.
That's, yeah. The
And
yeah,
it's believable.
I'll give you one of my fish, and yeah, he gave it right back. That is terrific.
As you were writing these stories, now you got every 50 states illustrated. Now, are there similar monsters in some of the states, or are there different monsters in every state?
Well, yeah, we've already touched on Bigfoot, and that one's fairly the same throughout the country, although there are some variations.
Well, how many states, for example, would Bigfoot cover?
Oh, 49.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it covers everything, and I've been working, going through monsters in Canada, and of course it takes, every province and territory in Canada as well. Yeah, there are some. There are a lot of animals that have been reported that are. It seems like they might be part dog and part cat. The Wampus cat, for one, that's been seen in a few different southern states. The Ozark howler being another that seemed to have. It looks similar to something that actually lives, but it's got bits and pieces of other animals in with it. There's also a fairly common, a lot of states call them melon heads, fairly common in Massachusetts, a couple other states around there, I believe Illinois, and in they're called the Grunch in Louisiana, but they're short, diminutive people that hang out on the edge of towns in wooded areas and attack, kill and eat wildlife and also been domesticated animals and tend to scare teenagers in cars.
Would you say that any of these creatures, Jason, would be part of the supernatural or paranormal crowd?
There are some, but when it comes to when it comes to monsters, I mean, we don't definitively know what these things are, even though we might guess on a few of them. So they could be anything. With Bigfoot, I tend to go with a more terrestrial explanation, although that's coming into disfavor with a lot of researchers. But some definitely, like the black dog of Hanging Hills in Connecticut, is more paranormal than anything.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be an omen.
Red eyes?
No, not this one. This although there are a lot of black dog stories in England and over here in the U.S. that do have red eyes. This one seems to be more like a friendly puppy when you see it. If you're in the black or if you're in the Hanging Hills, it'll follow you around all day. There was a story about a New York geologist named W.H.C. Pynchon, who was in the Hanging Hills in the late 1800s and saw a nice little dog, and it just followed him all day. And he went there again and saw it later, and it followed him again. The third time, the legend has it, the third time the dog, you venture into the Hanging Hills and see the black dog, you're going to fall to your death.
Unbelievable.
So that's more paranormal.
And you pet the dog, you end up with no hand, probably.
Well, possibly. I don't know. He seems like a good boy.
What has been for you, outside of the many Bigfoot stories, but what has been for you one of the most wild creature stories you've heard?
Well, I think my favorite, there are a few wild ones in there that are, there are a few different types of monsters. One, ones that I think are real. And two, a few in there that I'm pretty sure were made up. And one of those is the Slide Rock Boulder of Colorado. And miners back in the mid-1800s who were in the Rockies staking their claims would come back to town and tell people of the Slide Rock Boulder, which was a land whale. And instead of a fluke, it had a hook on the end of its tail, and it would hang on a mountain with that hook and wait for its prey and let go with the hook and slide down the mountain, eating up rocks and trees until it got, got down to whatever it was going to eat, which was mostly, people, I guess, coming to
tourists,
the miners and tourists as well. But that one seems fairly ridiculous because it's a land whale. But it's, you know, apparently kept some people out of the mountains the miners didn't want there.
What does it tell you, Jason, about the fact that there's so many creatures out there? And again, you know, let's assume 80% of them are real. That's a lot.
That is a lot, but if you think that every single year there is an average of like between 15 and 18,000 new species discovered. And a lot of those are insects, about half are insects, but there are amphibians and reptiles and mammals and different types of birds that are discovered each year. Just last year, and they're not small all the time either, just last year a new species of orangutan was discovered. Those are big animals. Yeah. So we keep finding new animals. One of these days, just got my fingers crossed, Bigfoot or maybe the thylacine over in Australia are going to fall on that list.
I just hope they don't shoot the creature. You know, if they're going to capture it for science and show people, you know, okay, that happens, but not kill it.
Yeah, that's the big twist. I want these things to be proven that they exist, but I don't want a dead body. But that might, you know, might be what it takes.
Well, you know what? When you have to weigh a captured dead Bigfoot because it was shot, as opposed to not having one, my preference would be not to have it.
Right, which I completely understand that, and I'm kind of torn with my you know, my desire to know, and also my desire that let it live, for God's sake.
Some people think Bigfoot is from a UFO or it's dimensional. Do you get that a lot?
Yeah, I do, and what I like to do, at least in my head, is to count out all of the terrestrial explanations before I go jumping toward something else that hasn't been proven by science, like, you know, yeah, UFOs or interdimensional travel. But there are an odd number of Bigfoot encounters or Bigfoot sightings that are in the same area as UFO sightings. And Bigfoot also tends to just disappear, you know, and sometimes leaving its, you know, footprints, and all of a sudden they're just gone. Where did he go? So, I mean, dimensional travel and UFOs would explain some of this odd behavior.
Chasing American Monsters, where do you get the book?
It's at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's in the Barnes & Noble brick-and-mortar stores and on my website as well.
Good for you. I still like the bricks-and-mortar bookstores. They're kind of nice to kind of peruse, aren't they?
Absolutely. I love the smell of a book. I love the feel of a book, and I just like going. And my wife and I, one of our first dates, we just went into a Barnes & Noble and looked at books, and that was beautiful.
It's a great way to relax.
Yes.
And you just wander around, and it's kind of cool seeing your book in the bookstore, isn't it?
It still floors me when I see my book in a bookstore.
Do you pinch yourself?
That's a little weird, but mentally I pinch myself.
That's my book.
Well, I've never shouted that yet, but maybe I should.
Do you tour much when you write your books?
Some. I do some. I mean, we've got three kids at home, and I don't like leaving for too long. I am going this weekend. I'm speaking at Haunticon Omaha up in Nebraska on Saturday afternoon.
Can they get info on your website? Is it up there?
I don't know if I posted it. I've been posting on social media like crazy. Haunticon has its own website, so they can find information there.
All right, Jason, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment and go through a number of these creatures that you've illustrated in the book, Chasing American Monsters. We'll go through them all. In the next hour, we'll open up the phone lines. We'll give you all an opportunity to ask Jason a question or share with us one of your creature monster stories as well. And I'm sure there are many. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're back with Jason Offutt, and his book is called Chasing American Monsters. Let's go through some of these creatures. Jason, I'll throw out a name, and you tell me a little bit about the creature. First one is a lake monster. Do you call it the Iliama Lake Monster?
Yeah, it's in Alaska. This is one of the lake monsters that I really like. There are a lot of lake monsters everywhere, and a lot of times people will we'll describe them like a plesiosaur, a lot like what people have reported in
Loch Ness.
Yeah, Loch Ness, absolutely. And, well, in Lake Champlain and up with in Canada with Ogopogo, but this is different. It's described as more like an orca with a head like a wolf, and it has been reported by the local Inuits for time immemorial. It's been when the Russians owned Alaska, explorers would report seeing this monster as well. This was a newspaper report, but people fishing from an airplane with a cable and tuna hook snagged the thing. They reported this is, I think, back in the 60s or 70s, and the beast was pulling them around the lake, and they ended up cutting the cable because they were afraid it was going to, crash them into the lake. And sightings have been were even reported as late as 2017. Local residents have seen, they've seen three of them swimming together, which would, be necessary for it to have lived that long, have a breeding population.
So clearly, they're seeing something.
They are seeing something. There have been explanations that, of course, it could be a sturgeon, which is always the explanation. Or a beluga whale, but none of these creatures gets as big as what have been reported.
Next one is called Goro.
The Goro is a monster in Arkansas. That's a it's a lizard. It's a giant lizard. It's about 20 plus feet long. And back in the 1800s, there was a newspaper report that one had been shot. And with a lot of these explanations about where did it go, they turned it over to scientists, and it allegedly disappeared.
Does it eat people?
It ate livestock. Fortunately, it didn't. There weren't any reports on it eating people. But it was a 20-foot-long lizard with huge tusks that lived in caves in northern Arkansas.
Next one. What are the Dark Watchers?
The Dark Watchers, I think, are absolutely fascinating. This is in California, and it's the local Native Americans had reports of these tall human shadow shapes that would appear on mountaintops and on cliffs, staring out over the mountains, and they would just stare. And if anybody would approach them, they would vanish. They would never leave any footprints, and they are still occasionally seen, but people can't ever approach them. They were so famous that John Steinbeck wrote about the Dark Watchers in one of his short stories.
The next one up, the Wog.
The Wog I shouldn't say it's a fun story, because it's a monster that comes out of a pit to hell to drag people to,
Nice.
This is the Creek Indians were afraid of, basically it was a mud volcano. It was a mud pond that seethed and bubbled and would give off steam, and they felt that, wow, this is a gateway to the underworld. This is a gateway to hell. And they would throw, if anybody, had done anything against the tribe's laws, they would throw them in the bog. And the legend was that the Wog was this demon dog about the size of a horse, with long black fur and a huge tail, would come out and grab the sinner and drag them down into the mud. Europeans, when they came around, reported seeing the creature slinking around their cabins, and just the sight of it would scare domesticated animals to death.
All right, now we know what pterodactyls are, but where is this thing flying around?
They're everywhere. I have loved dinosaurs ever since I was a little kid, and I guess who hasn't? But these have been seen all through throughout the desert Southwest. Mexico, they're seen today in Mexico and in New Guinea and in parts of Africa. But a couple of cases, one was a boy in the mid-2000s. He was a 12-year-old boy who was also fascinated with dinosaurs, who saw one in Hawaii. He was in Honolulu, and he saw it flying through the sky. A better report was in 1977 in Texas. Three teachers were coming back home from a conference, and there was a huge shadow on the road, and they pulled over and looked up, and there was a pterodactyl with what they estimated to be a 20-foot wingspan that had been flying over their car, and they watched as it flew off and disappeared into the distance. And the reason I like this one is they're three teachers. I think they would probably know what a pterodactyl looked like.
You would think so. Next one is called the Enfield Monster.
The Enfield Monster in Illinois. This was in the early 1970s. This was actually in 73. A lot of weird things happened in the U.S. in the early 70s, from monster sightings to a UFO flap. But there was a man that heard a knock on his door, and he looked out the window. It was late at night. He looked out the window, and he saw on his porch a short, it wasn't bipedal because it had three legs. It had two short arms, big pink eyes, and it was about four and a half feet tall. It was grayish colored as well. And there was a monster knocking on his door.
Knocking on the door.
Right. Jeez. So he did what Americans did and grabbed his gun and shot it. It hissed at him when the bullet hit and jumped like a kangaroo about what he estimated to be 50 feet in about three hops. And he called police, and police came, and they found what looked like dog-like footprints with six toes around the guy's property. And it was seen a few different times during the next couple of weeks, but then it kind of vanished from public view.
Clearly something was out there.
It was, and I also, you know, love the cases where more than one people witnesses something. It you know, shows that there's probably something out there. You're not going to really mistake a 4.5 foot tall monster on three legs with two short arms that jumps like a kangaroo. You're not going to mistake that with something else.
Next one is called the Miss Chenbeck. What the heck is that?
And that's an Indian word. I'm running into a blank with that one. What state was it in?
That one? It's on page 95 in your book.
Page 95.
You've got so many creatures out there.
Oh my gosh, I know.
It's in Iowa.
It's Potawatomi Indians had this you had the legend of this this creature. It's a water creature, Lake Manitou. And they would not hunt around this lake, or they wouldn't fish in the lake because of an evil spirit that lived in this lake. And it was a 30-foot-long serpent that had the head of a horse. People who had just moved to Iowa saw it in the early 1800s as they were building a corn mill, said that it had large yellow spots. And it was seen throughout the 1800s, although that was the last time of the sightings.
The Demon Leaper.
The demon. I love the names of some of these.
Who came up with these names?
Well, the people who saw it, they described them however they...
So these aren't your names.
Do what?
These aren't the names you gave it.
No. These are the names of the people who saw it, and they were like, this is what it is. You know, much like Mothman... it was just somebody gave it a name, and it hooked. The Demon Leaper in Kentucky, it looked like a living gargoyle that sat on the top of Walnut Street Baptist Church in Louisville, and it had bat-like wings and claws, and people would, you know, mistake it as a gargoyle until it started hopping along the roof and jumped across rooftops and start flying. And they called it the Demon Leaper because it looked like a demon, and it jumped a lot. Some witnesses said, oh, that's got to just be a monkey wearing a shiny suit, which tends to be... That was also for the Enfield Monster, one of the explanations. And usually any time there's a Bigfoot sighting, people are like, oh, it must have been an ape that escaped from a zoo. How often does that happen? How often are there monkeys and apes wandering around America? Not often.
What is the Grunch? We know what the Grinch is, but what's a Grunch?
The Grunch is Louisiana version of the melon heads. They are supposedly now they live around the eastern part of New Orleans in off a dead end road on the outskirts of town, and the legends of these, this is more of an urban legend than anything, and it is very similar across the country with different similar things, is that they're either inbred rednecks, or there was a insane asylum that people escaped from and lived out in the woods. And after years of inbreeding, they, you know, became small and got a taste for human flesh.
The Beast of Truro.
Yes, the Beast of Truro is, well, this was a more.
Well, I think we lost you. You still there? Nope, we've lost Jason, so let's get him. We'll call him back and line him back up, right in the middle of the Beast of Truro, whatever that was. His book is amazing because if he's got over 250 creatures from all over the place. And the one on the cover, though, the main goatman, that is crazy. But he's got it cataloged perfectly where every state has a certain monster, one or two, sometimes even three. And we'll try to get him back. We're taking calls next hour with your stories, of course, and your questions for Jason Offit. His website is his name. I'll spell it for you, JasonOffit.com. And it's quite a story, quite a research, but I don't know where he went. He just, like, disappeared. You were listening to him, and he was there, gone today, gone tomorrow, and maybe his phone died. Try his cell phone, too, if you can, Donna, and keep trying him. We'll see what happens. I hope he's okay. Maybe he got hit by lightning or something like that. You never know. And try to see if we can get him back. So let's see if we got him back. You got him back, Donna? And let's try to pick him up if he's there. And see if we got him. Yep, we do. He's back. There you are, Jason. The monster got you.
Yeah, I know. Something must have chewed through the phone line.
I mean, you were just gone. Did you hear me at all, or you were just gone?
Well, you asked about the Beast of Truro, right. And I started talking about it, and all of a sudden...
You're gone. All right.
One of the issues here is I'm at my office. I'm at work right now, and the building is purportedly haunted. I've interviewed a number of people, students, who've seen a ghost, so... Yeah, I'm here at almost 3 o'clock in the morning here, my time. So yeah, maybe let's say that happened.
All right, back to the beast. What is this thing?
It happened in a small town of around a small town of Truro, which is just north of Cape Cod, and it started in the early 1980s. And there were small animals. It started small with cats and small dogs being found. Just torn apart. By 1982, farmers were finding that their hogs had been injured, and it looked like they'd been ripped with large claws. Some people at night had reported seeing a large furry creature that they had no idea what it was. It was seen by a couple, a married couple who was taking a walk, and said that it looked like a big cat that had a long rope-like tail like the letter J, and they thought it was probably around 80 pounds, and it had a cat-like face, but they weren't quite sure if it was a mountain lion or not. If it was a mountain lion, they haven't been in that area in a very long time, so you know, local wildlife people thought that probably was not the case.
What is the Nain Rouge creature?
That is in Detroit, Michigan. It is a Native American legend, and they saw this red dwarf-like entity as a protector. And when the French were in that area, they would see it too. The first time they saw it is when they battled the British, and it was a really bloody battle. It's so bloody that they claimed that the local river was red for 3 days after the battle. But they saw this little monster dancing among the corpses in the battlefield. It's been seen by people up until the 1970s, and it tends to show up a few days before some disaster happens, some shooting. In the 70s, it showed up before there was a big blizzard that struck the city. They have a festival for it every year, and drink a lot of beer in its honor.
Yeah, they sure do. I was there in Detroit during that time period, it's a weird situation, a weird creature as well. Jason, we're going to take calls next year. There's a few more monsters I want to go through, but in just a moment, we're going to take some calls. But do you normally work on books like every other year? How often do you work on new books?
Well, I was a print journalist for 17 years and had no time to write books. And now that I teach at a university, I have summers free, so every summer I write one.
That's the time to do it. All right, calls next with you and a few more monster stories next.